The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
The Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome back. You're on with another post-game Sunday afternoon edition of your Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Sox drop the final game, Crochet Day, 5-3. Do take the series 2-1, but a lot of just wild moments happening in this game. So, Jeremy, take it away. How do you think this one went, in your opinion?
Yeah, so for the series, I'm happy they keep winning series. I think the Marlins are a team they should be beating, so I don't have a problem there. It's just frustrating at the end of the day because we put ourselves in position to sweep the series. We should have swept the series, and we don't. For a while after the game today, I felt like upset, disappointed, frustrated. And as I got farther and farther away from the game, I kind of said, all right, hold on, we won a series, we hold a playoff spot, you know, things are going well, Crochet went back to pitching well, but the result from today was born of yesterday's frustrations, even though we won the game. Isaiah Campbell, and I root for him, you know. I don't want to see anyone fail, especially in our team. These guys are human beings and all that, you know, but he sucks. He sucks at the big league level. I saw him pitch in Worcester. That's where he should be pitching. And this has happened to us seven, 10, 12 times this year, where we can't clean up a ninth inning with a multi-run lead. And when I say multi, more than three, a numerous run lead. And so you got to go warm Chapman up. And even though he throws only four pitches, he goes through the rigmarole of getting loose, getting hot, getting in the game, pitching with adrenaline. And so you got to shut him down and not pitch him today in game three. And, you know, it bothered me tremendously yesterday. And then, as it were, if you have Chapman available, you probably win the game. So, you know, today's frustration really is born of yesterday's missed opportunity there. Now, with that said, I was doing kids stuff and flag football and basketball, so I didn't get to listen to post game. I'd be interested if Cora said something about that situation. I would think Chapman would have wanted into the game today, and Cora just said no. If Chapman told Cora that he was available, I don't know why Chapman wouldn't have thrown in this game. So I think it's a Cora decision, just guessing. But just frustrating result. And I know there's some other things we're going to talk about the game, but I'll give it back to you for your overview of the weekend, Charlie.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing I also forgot to mention, I haven't said it yet. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter/X at Smith_MLB, my companion this evening, JT Schill 20 with two L's, Jeremy Schilling. So, here's the thing. It's really disappointing when you have a lead as high as you do and you're forced to bring your closer. Isaiah Campbell should be gone. I also don't think that Chapman, after only having thrown three pitches technically yesterday, because one was a pitch clock violation, there was an automatic strike in there as well. You threw three pitches, you should be okay to throw the next day. I know you threw the 2 days prior. You threw 10, 11 pitches, three pitches. You've thrown 14 pitches in 2 days. You should be okay. God forbid you can't handle it. Outside of May 27th, the day that Hendricks just blew up, one blown save all year. One blown save. Miami Marlins are just not a team that I'm very, very terrified by. And you bring in Steven Matz to face their lefty rookie who is just hitting everything. And this is a pinch hitter. Marcy has, you know, minutes in Major League Baseball, but his home run came off of, I don't even remember what pitch, but I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have cracked it at 102. And that's what Chapman would have thrown at him if he was facing him in the ninth inning. So it was really, really hard. This was a very winnable game. Dougie Acheson and I were talking about how we have 40 games left. We're definitely finishing up a 500 for the remaining season. You won two, you have 38 games left. You should have won three with 37 left. Instead, now you're 2-1 with 37 left. There were a lot of other things, though, in this game that it's like, well, you know what? The Red Sox really shouldn't have won because Willy Abreu got a home run from a ball that was 2-3 feet from the fence. It was in the glove. The right fielder, Myers, had it, bumped into the wall, and it literally, it like just popped out, went over the fence. And it was just like a, yeah, that's a home run, man. If it bounces, it doesn't actually hit the ground, hits the glove and goes over. That's a home run. So we got really lucky on that. The announcers had actually mentioned that too. You got Obi talking about how Willy Abreu's been on the other end of that luck, where he went into the stands, caught a ball, and his, I think it was like his elbow and arm hit the chair and the glove and the ball popped out over the fence, and it was a home run. So there's that. And then you have the Toro getting a sacrifice fly because the prior batter hit Jansen junk and it deflected and went into right field, which allowed for this opportunity to be a sac fly. So we really, you know, we got a 2-run homer because of luck. And then we had a sac fly because of just a weird deflection. So we had plays go our way. This was another episode of the, okay, analytics matter here. Our closer just doesn't have the ability of going a third straight game. The worst part about it is that you're panning to Aroldis Chapman, not once, not twice, three times. And that's brutal. You know, I think the air in the sails or air behind the sails, whatever that expression is, I don't care at this point, was taken out when Jim Wolf called Sadon Rafael on a pitch that was low and outside by like 4 inches. And Sadon was just absolutely stoned at the plate. Was never supposed to be strike three, was working that count, doing his damnedest to make it a proper at bat, just really, really unlucky. So, you know, at the end of the day, Jeremy, I'm like you. I'm happy that the Sox were able to take two games of the three. It sucked again that we weren't able to win on Crochet Day. But at the end of the day, we still have 37 games left and we do not have the hardest schedule left. So I'm going to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, after the game, I was extremely frustrated. But I mean, when I got over the initial emotion of it, it's big picture. We're still going in the right direction. I just want to do a quick anecdote. The Willy Abreu home run was the right fielder made a great play getting to the ball. And if Agreed. he's quicker to guard himself and bring his glove down, he probably holds on to it. So it was just bad luck that I felt like, you know, he didn't know exactly where the wall was. Maybe he felt like he had more room. I don't know. But the quintessential gift home run was back, I think, in the 90s, where Jose Canseco just completely misplayed a ball where he didn't get his glove on it. And ricocheted like a basketball just on a bounce pass right into the stands. Right. That if you haven't seen that, like, go see it. It's just unbelievable. But yeah, look, I mean, there's a lot to take from it. Story's continuing to be a plus player. You know, I mean, things are going the right way. I was, you know, for those of you worried about Crochet's innings, like, he's still the same guy. You know, every start, every inning is his high thing. He's just extending. He's already passed it. So. And that's something I was worried about. I've mentioned that in the pregame in the show before the year about skipping starts and, you know, going, giving them an extra day here or there. And they did it coming out of the All-Star break. But he's proving that, you know, he's not done yet. He's got, you know, and it, part of it is he's a huge guy. He obviously takes care of himself. They keep his pitch count kind of in check, 300 pitches per three starts. You hate it, but it might be a reason why he's still that guy. So, you know, I'm excited. I'm optimistic. I'm glad we're through that kind of gauntlet of the schedule with the West Coast trip. So, you know, wish you swept this one, but I mean, look, we took 2 or 3. It's baseball. Sometimes weird stuff happens, and right.
He got unlucky in his last one too. I mean, this is he hasn't lost back-to-back games at all year. He hasn't, you know, he's had no decision and losses back-to-back, you know, several times, but he has not registered 2 losses in back-to-back starts. So there was that going for him. His longest streak of wins was 6. And I mean, against Houston, you know, unfortunately, the streak of 6 went away. So a no decision here. I'm like you. I'm not going to poo-poo it because, you know, teams during the course of the season face crappy teams and they face really good teams. And, you know, we're able to win. I don't care if you lose in a silly way in one of the games. Our right field at Fenway Park is unlike any other major league ballpark. You know, very few stadiums have those short porches just in general. And Fenway's unique. I mean, if that was deep center, he hits the garage and he probably catches that ball. But to your point, this is an inexperienced right fielder with the oldest ballpark that is not perfectly, you know, a mirror image from deep center all the way to left and all the way to right. You know, if this was Angel Stadium in deep left field, that's a home run too, but it's not in right field. So it's just or right center rather. It's just one of those things that was just really, really unlucky. And, you know, it's not the end of the day. I'm not going to lose any sleep.
Yeah. I want to highlight a comment here. Sure. Jules, friend of the program, consistent contributor, which of course we appreciate, says 100 pitches is pure fiction. Arm injuries have proven it. Yeah. Jules, you and I agree on a lot. And I'm not picking on you because I don't think it's necessarily a bad take. I'm just going to give you my counterpoint to it. You know, I'm 41 years old. Baseball 20 years ago was so different. You didn't have guys throwing 93, 95, 100, 101. Guys that threw hard threw in the low to mid 90s. It's the muscle that these guys are putting on their body, the torque they're creating through tweaks in the mechanics, is putting more stress on the arm. And I hear you. I just disagree. Not saying I'm right, obviously, but I do think that's a concern. Crochet is a big dude. I do think that tends to protect the body, but he's also a crossover pitcher. And what I mean by that is his plant leg is on the third base side of the rubber. If you watch closely from the center field camera, he's actually planting on the first base side and then crossing his arm over his body, which is something Sale does. He just does it to a much greater extent. And I do think because of that mechanic, which is part of what makes him great, so you can't take it away, I do think that's something you worry about. And, you know, just generally speaking, and I'm not a huge analytics guy, but if having him throw 100 pitches not only keeps him healthy, but keeps him at the top level of his game in the play as we get into September in the playoffs, I hear you. I hate it too. And I think there are certain days where you can let a guy go 115, but it's that discipline that I think has allowed him to be that consistent this year. And when I say consistent, like a top 3 Cy Young candidate all year long, especially now where he's blown through his previous innings limit. So I hear you. I think there's going to be a lot of people that agree with you, but I think with the sports science having such an effect on these athletes, I do think that number is something that's going to stick around and for good reason. I don't know if you have anything on that, Charlie.
No, I mean, gone are the days where you see pitchers throwing between 120 and 150. Like, if you look back, you can find some matches where, you know, Greg Maddux used to throw over 110 pitches or 120 pitches. Randy Johnson has a couple that if you look back, there's a couple of 130s in there, a couple even higher than that. You know, the game has changed. It's already evolved, right? So we want to thank Jules for adding the comment, and yeah, we appreciate the fans leaving comments and whatnot as well. It's important to talk about, but I mean, in the last 5 years, the game changed probably more than it did in the 10 years before that, where they made some massive rule changes. Now you have the ability to appeal calls. You can challenge. There's an automatic runner at second base. There's a pitch clock now. All these things didn't exist 5 years ago. These were never options. It was just, oh, wouldn't it be crazy if there was a way to do that? That's what we were saying 20 years ago. So, you know, it's an old timers game where the element of human error is the only sport that it exists in. There is no human error in you know, basketball and soccer. There's VAR for that, VAR. You know, basketball's got their own system as well. And, you know, it's different. You know, that's what makes baseball a little bit unique. If robots came into the game and created perfect strike zones, guys like Jose Altuve are going to be ripping, and then players like Aaron Judge are going to be screwed, because that strike zone is going to be dramatically different for each of those guys. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, there have been days where I've said, man, I wish they brought in the umps. And then there are others where I'm like, oh my God, you know, thank God we have a human ump and not a robot ump. But I mean, Angel Hernandez isn't here anymore. You know, umpires try their hardest, I believe, to call the best game possible. I mean, it is what it is. Things are different. At the end of the day, you know, back to your point too, Jeremy, about Crochet, as soon as he cracked it by a third of an inning or an inning, he's already surpassed his total, you know, innings per year limit. So it is what it is at this point. I mean, I'm happy he hasn't gone down. I'm super thankful he hasn't gone down, because I think that if Crochet were to go down, we'd be in major trouble every fifth day. He has the most important start, and it's disappointing when we can't get the win for him. That's what it comes down to. You win for Crochet, you just need to win two of the other five starts. So you won two of the five. Crochet, you think, okay, should be an automatic win. Maybe you get lucky and you split one of the final two. You've won four of five for that five-game set. Instead, now you have to win one of the next two just to hit expectations of win three, lose two. Minor analysis.
Yeah, so another piece of news that broke since the last time we did the show was that, if you haven't heard, Marcel Meyer is out for the year. He's having surgery on a tendon on his hands that controls the placement of the bones or something. Something that I feel like it's one of those injuries like only baseball players and maybe golfers get. I've never heard of that. Brad Sandler suggests that a move should be made to shore up the infield. Brad, also a contributor and somebody that watches at least every time it feels like I'm on. So thank you, Brad. I don't think anything's coming outside the organization. Obviously, any move now, you can't put him on the playoff roster, Brad. Right. So it's like one of those things where it's going to be within the organization, and the answer's probably going to be Hamilton. He's already up. There shouldn't be a move here. Obviously, Mayer was already on the DL. And Hamilton could be a guy that's on the playoff roster for basically stealing a bag of the 7th, 8th, and 9th defensive replacement if you need it. I think what you're going to see is what you've had, which is Rafael is going to play some second base. Romy's going to play some second base, especially against lefties. And we're going to go with the way we've been playing the last 3 weeks. I just don't see any changes happening. I don't know if you think there should be something there, Charlie.
Well, I mean, on Marcel Meyer, you know, the concern for him is that he cannot stay healthy. It's been a different injury. They talked about this in the pregame today. It's been this bone, or it's been a shoulder injury. And Marcel Meyer has never actually played 100 games in a season. He's never completed a full season. So that's a bit of a concern. I feel for the kid, because he's also watching other players on his team get massive contracts. Massive contracts, players that came up after he did. And so that's got to be weighing on him a little bit as well. Bringing back Hamilton, really, that's just your ninth inning stolen base guy. I don't want to see him trying to do the bunt laydown thing again like he did in San Diego. That was horrible to watch live. It was awful to see on TV again. But now you have your speedster in the ninth inning. You know, you have that guy. Should we get a base runner at first? And we need to get second base. We have that part down. It sucks to lose Marcelo. We wish him well. I hope the recovery is quick and speedy, given the fact that he is young. But this is a player that, you know, the Red Sox have to wonder, like, is it going to be him or Willier? Willier pulled up a little limp on third, coming actually from third, scoring on the sack fly from Toro. And he was kind of like wincing. He had enough energy and strength to get by, but immediately taken out of the game for precautionary reasons. Like, this is one of those things where you have to be really conscientious about the future of your team. Trading Marcelo Meyer, okay, cool. You're probably going to extend Bregman because Bregman's, you know, an elite fielder. He misplayed a ball, took a weird bounce. And I've seen a couple of those come from him as of late, which is disappointing too. Or do you trade Abreu? So there's going to be a lot of interesting conversations during the 2025 offseason before 2026 because of those two players. I do not foresee Marcelo Meyer and Willy Abreu both playing for the Boston Red Sox in 2026. I just don't.
I mean, if you got to use him to go get Joe Ryan, I don't have a problem with it. Tough situation. The problem with his value is that while he looks like a big league player, he didn't really do anything great except for his defense. So offensively, he didn't hit for a high average. He did have the two home run game, but didn't go crazy with power. So I don't think he's made himself appealable. I don't think he has no value like Cassis,
right?
Who Lori is bringing into the chat, but you can't be like, well, he's hurt. He's got the injury history. Let's trade him. He has to have value when you do it. So if that's your plan, then you got to get him healthy, put him on the field, show what kind of player he can be, so he has value, so you can actually get a return for him. That's not how trading players works. Like, he's hurt, his value's at an all-time low. It's using the trade. You're not getting anything of value in return. And he's not a player I don't think you just give up on. I am curious as to why he keeps getting hurt. I don't know enough about his injuries in the minor leagues to have an opinion. But right. If I'm the Red Sox, I'm sure by now the doctors have, you know, said something about what's going on. It might be different injuries. Then that's something. Why is it a different part of his body breaking down? If it's the same thing over and over, and I know the wrist was an issue last year, then it's a possibility that the surgery just resolves the issue. So we'll see how it goes as we get into spring training, because Cora did say before today's game that he will be ready for spring training.
Right. Yeah. The injury today, I had to look up, you know, what exactly this was. Like, you saw him just a couple days prior just fielding balls. So it's like, how bad is it? And then we find out that the wrist injury, it's the TFCC, which is a triangular fibrocartilage complex. Like you mentioned, 3 months out of commission. He'll be back for spring training for 2026. But, you know, he's taken cortisone shots to resolve wrist issues. He's had a shoulder problem before as well. So he's had inflammation problems in the past. I don't know, man. I mean, it's a concern. Like, how long until somebody like this goes down? It's now a question of who goes down first, him or Casas. It's really tough. It's really, really hard. Like, I would feel gutted to be this kid right now. I feel for him. I want him to have a healthy recovery. Nothing would give me greater joy than seeing him absolutely torch it in the spring and get that call up for 2026 and be already on the roster. But,
well, he's going to be on the roster to start this. I
hope so.
The thing that sucks from my perspective is obviously he's hurt. He's going to have surgery. It sucks for him, the mental thing that he's going through. Right. And the same for Cassis, right?
Right.
He's going to miss out on an opportunity to play in really important games. And that was the big thing for me when they started to win in July, is let's play meaningful games with the young guys so that we're going to ascend. Like, if we're playing meaningful games next year, that means we're probably a year away from contending. So this year, it looks like we're going to get that opportunity. You're going to put young guys, of which I still hold Duran, who hasn't played for anything yet. Yep. Duran, Narvaez, Roman, should have been Marcelo. Like, there's tremendous value in having your young core play meaningful or playoff games, and I think it's going to be both this year. So that's where I'm really, like, just bummed, is he would have gotten those at-bats. Big moment, big crowd, Fox televised national game in September and October. That's where you lose out on his development a little bit, and that sucks, you know, above and beyond the human factors of having someone be injured.
Yeah, it's, you know, injuries are part of the game. We've talked about this multiple times on multiple episodes over the course of multiple years. I just, again, fingers crossed, it's nothing terrible and he's able to, you know, stay healthy for a full season. I'd love to see what he could do in a full year. Brad Sandler, also wrote in here another comment. My hand doctor said it's a very tricky injury to deal with. Not 100% easy to not happen again. The fact that he's had that, makes me nervous.
We've got YouTube doctors and this and that. Oh man. Yeah, no, it does make me nervous.
He's had cortisone shots in the past for the same wrist. So it's just a really unlucky wrist. Like, you know what? If it takes 3 months, take six. I don't care. You know, it's August now. You come back beginning of April, rehab the whole month of April if you need it, and then come back in May. I think we'll be fine if it takes you an extra couple of months. It's just not worth it. He's also had shoulder issues. He's had a lumbar strain. Like, it's one thing after another. But I want to get off of Meyer again and say, you know, with this upcoming series that the Red Sox have now, you know, we've talked about, obviously, the Red Sox do not have a very difficult schedule. They're kind of facing a rather pretty easy schedule. We now get to face the Orioles, and that's going to just be a two-game set. It's going to be tomorrow and Tuesday. I know that we've talked about it amongst ourselves in the war room. You got Dustin May in there going up against Trevor Rogers. I don't know if you've looked at Rogers' numbers, but he's doing really well. In his last 2 months, he's only had one game where he's allowed more than two runs.
Yeah, I mean, his ERA is 1.43, so that's a problem.
That's pretty good.
I think we'll get to him. You're going to see the right-handed lineup, which means Yoshida's going to be out. Duran's going to be dropped in the order. Hopefully it'll be Narvaez. Right. Romy will be in there. So, I feel okay, like, get to 3, 4, 5 runs, especially if you can just get his pitch count up and beat up that bullpen. My concern for this game is Dustin May. And I get, you know, what have you done for me lately? Well, it was actually pretty good. I don't expect that to be the player until he runs some starts together. So while I'm optimistic based on his most recent performance, I still have concerns about what the greater body has looked like over the course of the year for both the Dodgers and the Red Sox. I don't like tomorrow. I don't like it.
So I'm a big May guy. I'm a big Bueller guy. And it'd be awesome to say, oh, yeah, we're going to go 5-0 to start this little five-game set before we face the Yankees. I actually think that what we saw from Dustin May, I think there's a chance that maybe, you know, I think we might have maybe unlocked something with May. So May, I think, will win game one. I don't know about game two. I still like Bueller. I'm just not wholeheartedly confident. Jules, again, a familiar friend to the pod here. We didn't deplete our entire team. Like, we got rid of one major piece, but we've been able to sustain ourselves. We've actually done better without him than actually with him. So I would challenge that and say, you know, honestly, Jules, do you think that the Baltimore Orioles are a better team than the Boston Red Sox? Do you think that the Miami Marlins are a better team than the Boston Red Sox? Because here's the thing, my friend, 6 of your next 10 games are against Baltimore. You have 4 against New York at New York, 4 against Baltimore at Baltimore after the 2 games at home at Fenway. And then the remaining month is 3-game set at Pittsburgh. I'm also not really scared about them either. So I don't know. I think we have, again, a continued reason to be optimistic. We are a playoff team. We're going to win close to 90 games. If we don't hit 90, I think there's a chance. On the last show that I did with Dougie, we talked about my number, and we had, I think, Jason at 90, Terry was at 93. I think it was 88. Or 88. So I think there's a chance that this team could actually, you know, get there. I mean, this is a team that could do it. Like, all we have to do, go 22-18 from that 40 game spot. Now at this point, we just need to go 20-18, now 20-17. So there's a chance. So I disagree with you, Jules. I think we are a better team. We've shown that we can do it better. We've scored more runs. We've had some incredibly surprised performances from some of our team. I also think we're going to split but I think it's going to be the other way around. I think May's going to win the first one, and then we may have a little bit of a struggle bus session in game two. Anything else you want to add, Jeremy, to that one?
Look, these two game series are wonky. I don't love them. I'd like to see them off the schedule. To me, it feels like a doubleheader mentality. And what is some weird stat, like 67 or 74% of doubleheader split. Like, it feels like they're going to win one, lose one. Just a hunch, not to go deep dive on it. Obviously, Bueller and May are 4 and 5 guys right now. So, you know, I do think that we could beat a good pitcher, especially a lefty. And, the Orioles obviously underachieved. We thought they were going to be a little bit better, but go split this thing, beat them up next time you see them, where we're going to have the other arms going.
Yeah. Here's another thing too. As far as the American League is concerned, the Boston Red Sox are trailing only one team as far as runs scored. They are 10 runs behind the New York Yankees, also in the American League East. We're above them right now, barely. We still have one of the better run differentials in the game. We have the second best run differential. So give me the Boston Red Sox all day. We know that our pitchers aren't going to be absolutely, you know, sexy with the runs allowed, you know. But here's the thing, man. Baltimore has allowed 605 runs. The Red Sox are at 532. So runs scored, we're at 626. Baltimore is at 537. So you have a pretty wide variance of those two teams. Baltimore is also 10 games behind us. I'm not worried about it. I'm done talking about it. 10 and a half games behind. Anything else you had as far as takeaways from this one? No?
Go Sox.
That's right. We'll end it on that note. We hope the Red Sox do great in this next series. Everyone have a great one. Take care.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.